A bomb scare at a Baltimore TV station. Employees evacuated after a man in an animal costume claiming he was wearing a suicide vest began making threats before SWAT teams eventually took him down. ABC's Pierre Thomas has all the details now from Baltimore. Good morning, Pierre.
A man wearing a surgical mask and a hedgehog animal costume claiming to have a bomb at Baltimore TV station WBFF, shot four times by police. The bizarre incident began at 1:20 in the afternoon when 25-year-old Alex Riley walked into the station's lobby. He claimed he was wearing a suicide vest along with his outrageous outfit. His demands...
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 438 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, May 1st, 2016, Payback Sunday. I am the Solid Monster. This podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering listeners of the Sound Off a free 30-day trial of the Audible service. You can sign up using our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. You can try out the service free for 30 days. They've got over 180,000 different titles to choose from, many of which are wrestling books, some of which are narrated by the wrestlers themselves. So you can choose from Hulk Hogan's book. He narrates that himself. JTG does the same for his first book. Brock Lesnar's book is on there. Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels, Daniel Bryan, bunch of different wrestling books. Dusty Rhodes, I think, is another one. So audibletrial.com/solidmonster, sign up. You can try it out free for a month. You get one free audiobook that you get to keep no matter what, courtesy of the Sound Off. So jump on that offer. This has been a very interesting week for a number of different reasons, and we have a lot of things to get into here. I'm also working a little under the weather here, as if everything else that's been going on isn't enough. But we got some good news at the beginning of the week. I wanted to mention that up front, and I wanted to give a thank you to everybody. The Sound Off was the number 4 ranked podcast or show, really, of any kind on all of Stitcher Radio last week. And that's out of over 40,000 different shows that are on there. We were number 4, and we were number 1 in the sports category. So I wanted to say thank you to everybody who made that possible. I know some people have had issues streaming with Stitcher, and I even kind of ranted on them a little while back and listed all the many different ways you could listen to this podcast, but apparently there are still many of you who choose Stitcher and like the Stitcher service. So I just want to say thank you for making that possible. That was a very cool thing for me to see when I checked the list on Tuesday. So again, thank you for that. And also here, if you want to make a PayPal donation, as you well know, you can do so at any time that you want to. Entirely up to you. You can do so on thesolemonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. I want to say thank you to, who else? Of course, John Loose Cannon Lopez, big supporter of the show. Deadpool James Herrera. Keith the Conqueror Krajnik. Beast Mode Brock Joseph. Light 'em Up Lamont Ambler. Misfit Miguel Mendoza. Ladies Man Levi Daly. The Chosen Son, Andre Smith. Jet Setter John Peterson. Canadian Destroyer, Rob Morrow. Rolex Robin Party. The Symbol of Excellence, Justin Simbidis. Diesel-powered Anthony Mitchell. Juan Berriamall Bermudez. Strongman Stephen Burton. Stephen Miami Vice. Joseph Road Rage Rodriguez. The Irish Assassin, Connor Grennan. And Tony the Terror Liefert, whose daughter Gianna was born on Friday night. So Tony is a proud papa right now. Congrats to him. So again, thank you to everybody who made a donation, and if you want to do so, so it's always up there, the box 24/7 on thesolemonster.com if you ever want to saunter on over there. We are going to do Payback predictions in a little bit. In fact, I think I'll talk about Raw in a little bit, and then we'll jump into Payback. Doesn't really make sense to do it the other way. But before we get into any of that, we are going to do Sad Tweet first this week. I was going to give Sad Tweet to Dixie Carter for saying the EC3 Mike Bennett match on Impact must end by pinball or submission, which actually sounds like the kind of stipulation that might get me to watch TNA again. So Dixie had it all wrapped up for herself this week. But along came Alex Riley with all of his rage directed at me for some reason. He apparently took great offense to something I said. I haven't mentioned the guy's name on this podcast in weeks and weeks, so I was quite confused at first. So out of nowhere, I got hit by the following tweets. This would have been, I guess, on Thursday. Completely unsolicited, out of the blue, I get this from Alex Riley. He says, "Hey, dumbass," that would be me, "if you're going to talk shit, at least be a man and have me on your show." Says, "I could do you a favor and give your disgrace of a quote-unquote show some credibility. And do your homework as opposed to most people you talk to. I am highly educated and come from a family of actual broadcasters." Well, that is true. He does come from a family of broadcasters. I know his father has been in radio. I don't know if he still is or not. I don't know who he's referring to when he says, "as opposed to the other people I talk to." Yeah, this is not an interview show, but obviously I've done plenty of interviews before. And I've spoken to, just this year alone, I've spoken to quite a few people that are even higher up on the food chain than Alex Riley. So I don't know that those people would take very kindly to that comment. So that's what he said. Out of the clear blue sky, he tweeted all that to me. And, you know, I looked at that and I said to myself, boy, he must really want to get on the show. All he had to do was just drop me a note and say, "Hey, I'd love to come on," and I would have invited him on. So I responded to him, you know, very, very politely and very kindly, and I said, basically, "You've got an open offer to come on at any time that you want to." You know, he threw down the gauntlet, and I accepted. I said, "Hey, anytime you want to come on, you're more than welcome to come on." So then the next day, apparently he wasn't done. There were a couple of more tweets. He sends out another tweet. Now again, he didn't shed any light on exactly what it was that I said that pissed him off. Anybody who listens to this podcast, like I said, I haven't mentioned him in a while, but when I do mention Alex Riley, especially since he came back, I'll poke fun at the guy. You know, I've done that during the NXT reviews. Nothing overly malicious, and again, it's not like I'm mentioning him every week, so I'm trying to think to myself, why now? Like, what could I have possibly said to make him so upset? So then these tweets came the next day. He said, "So, at Solomonster thinks I have, quote, no talent, and runs down an NXT buddy of mine from behind a mic. Cool. Just let me on your show." Well, let me in your show, he says. "Let me in your show live, please." And then this just goes to show you, like, how wound up this guy is. He actually took a screenshot of a Twitter reply that I sent to somebody else. There was another guy on Twitter, and I don't have any beef with this guy. He's a random guy. I don't know him from a hole in the wall. He has said he hasn't even listened to my show before. I guess he's a friend of Alex Riley's, or likes Alex Riley, and he kind of saw what was going on. And he had tweeted me and said, "Hey, you know, Alex wants to come on your show. Give me a follow, and I'll send you his information." And I very politely responded to this guy who I don't know. And I said, "Thanks. You know, basically let Alex know he can DM me himself if he's interested." Because obviously, hey, he tagged me on Twitter. He knows who I am. He knows how to reach me. If he wants to come on the show, he can get in touch with me himself. He doesn't have to go through some mysterious third party here. And the guy responded and basically kind of laughed and said, "All right, I'll relay the message." And again, I don't know who this person is. So in the last tweet he sent here, he took a screenshot of my reply to the guy. He took a screenshot of me telling the guy, "Thank you. Tell Alex to DM me himself if he's interested." And this is what Alex Riley said. He said, "Nice try, but I prefer to keep all communication public so we're well aware of the type of coward you are." It's like, so he didn't do himself any favors with this tweet. People were just piling on him, just saying all sorts of things about him. How this makes me a coward when I have extended the invitation for him to come on the show, he hasn't explained. He hasn't said a word since then, and I don't think he will. So let me just give people an update on what's going on here, because some people are hearing about this for the first time. This is such nonsensical bullshit. I don't even want to spend too much more time on this here, but obviously I was going to address it. So I'll just say this. I was thinking, okay, what could I have possibly said? So the first thing I did was I jumped on YouTube, I should say. I put in Solomonster Alex Riley, and the very first clip that came up had the headline, "Alex Riley equals Triple H without the talent." Now, this was a clip that TV Tracks posted. TV Tracks is an unaffiliated channel, as many of you know, on YouTube. In fact, many people who listen to the show first heard about this podcast because of Tracks. And Tracks takes clips from a lot of different podcasts, not just mine, and he'll post them up. And we've picked up a lot of fans that way. Tracks is a good guy. He's been very supportive of the show now for a number of years, probably going on 4 or 5 years now. He's a great guy. But every now and then, he will post clips that have a misleading title, whether it's done intentionally just to drive up views, which, like, everybody does, or it's his interpretation of the clip. It happens from time to time. It doesn't happen very often, but it happens. And so I listened to the clip, and without knowing for sure what sparked this whole thing, here's what I think happened. And I'm actually going to play the clip for you. And it's only like a minute, I think, minute and a half. It's not that long. This clip that I'm going to play for you, which is from, it's up on Tracks right now if you want to listen to it there, but this is from episode 422 of The Sound Off, which is way back on January 31st. So we're going back to January, okay? We're going back to the beginning of the year now. And it was during an NXT review. This must have been right after Alex Riley came back. He came back looking like Triple H from, stuck in a time warp from 20 years ago. And I'm pretty sure this has to be the clip that he's referring to based on that whole tweet. Oh, I said he has no talent. And I'll get into that in a second. Let me play the clip for you now that allegedly induced this rage rant, this rage-filled rant by Alex Riley. And then I'll have more to say. So here's the clip again. This is from January. This is from Sound Off episode 422. Alex Riley, who looks a lot like 1999 Triple H now. I mean, he looks a lot like Triple H from back then, from the hair to the body and the color of the knee pads and elbow pads that he's wearing. He is Triple H from 1999, only without the talent that Triple H had. He came back. He pinned Bull Dempsey after a knee to the face. I will give him credit. I mean, he did cut a good promo backstage after the match. Alex Riley is a very good talker. He cut a promo. For some reason, he was in a dark corner all by himself, which seems like a metaphor for his entire career there. He said for the last 4 months, he'd been sending messages to Stanford and getting no response. I can just see Triple H sitting there looking at his phone just going, fuck, it's Riley again. Like, don't answer it. He was also upset because Sami Zayn got promo packages for weeks telling fans that he was coming back, and he got nothing. Remember when Riley retweeted a screenshot of a sign on Raw that said Rage, thinking it was a reference to him, but then the person who actually brought the sign came forward and said it actually had nothing at all to do with him? I just thought of that. Poor guy. So that was the clip. I'm assuming that's the clip that started this whole thing without him actually telling me and just kind of dancing around that I have no idea of knowing. But let's assume that that was the clip that started this whole thing. Here's what I think happened. I think that one night, Alex Riley either was on his computer searching around for clips of himself or of people talking about him, and he stumbled across this clip. He saw the headline, and he freaked out. I'm not even sure if he bothered listening to the clip, because had he listened to the clip, he would understand that at no point during that clip, which I just played for the entire world to hear, at no point during that clip did I say, Alex Riley has no talent. Right? You'd think a college-educated guy, he'd be smart enough to figure this out on his own. What I clearly said in the clip was, he came back looking like Triple H from 1999 or 2000, which, by the way, and I've said this before, the best Triple H, that 2000-2001 version of Triple H, the best Triple H. He came back looking like Triple H from that era, only without the talent that Triple H had. And that's my opinion. If I put the two of them side by side, Triple H from that era and Alex Riley now, and I understand Alex Riley's got a sports background. I think he played football. He may well be a better athlete than Triple H. That's not what this is about. I'm talking about Triple H, the pro wrestler, and Alex Riley, the pro wrestler. And if you compare the two of them, I'm going with Triple H. That's my opinion. And I'm entitled to have that opinion. But don't twist it and make it sound, oh, I said Alex Riley has no talent. I never said Alex Riley had no talent. And if the guy bothered to listen to the clip, he would understand that. So either he didn't listen to it, he saw the headline and drew conclusions that made him look foolish, or he did listen to the clip, but he heard what he wanted to hear. Either way, he does not come out of this looking good at all. He just looks bad. why even lash out about something like that? I mean, how thin this guy's skin must be. But that's just part of it. So then he mentions, oh, I insulted one of his NXT buddy of his. Again, I'm going to assume, because he's being vague and doesn't want to actually say who this was in reference to, that clip went on to talk about the Drifter. Because the Drifter, I think, made his debut on that episode of NXT. So right after the Alex Riley stuff, the Drifter wrestled. And you know my thoughts on the Drifter. I am no fan of the Drifter because I find the Drifter boring. That's just how I feel. There is nothing entertaining about the Drifter. But he takes it so personally, like Elias Samson, the human being. I've insulted this man. I'm not talking about Elias Samson. I'm talking about the Drifter. A lot of people don't realize, I think Elias Samson was around at some point, way before the Drifter became a thing. I don't really remember because he didn't really do much, but along comes the Drifter, and I drift to sleep. I don't apologize for it. That's just how it is. That's my opinion. And guess what? If Elias Samson disappeared, and he came back in 6 months with a completely different gimmick, with a completely different character, with a completely different persona, whatever word you want to use, he's playing a different part now. He looks different. He sounds different. There's a 50-50 chance I might actually like the guy. Because it's not about Elias Samson the person, it's about the frickin' Drifter character. He's the Drifter. Ooh. I watch his matches, I'm bored to tears. That's my opinion. I'm entitled to my opinion. It's nothing personal against the guy, just like it's nothing personal against Alex Riley. And look, here's what I think is going on here, okay? I think Alex Riley went on Twitter, like you know, the big jock picking on the nerd. I'll be the nerd here, okay? I'm the nerd. He's the jock. And, you know, he's going to go ahead and bully somebody. And he goes ahead, oh, have me on your show. Have me on your show and say that to me. So I don't think he was expecting me to actually invite him on the show. That's what I think is really also going on here. I might have caught him off guard a little bit by saying, sure, come on the show. Angry and pissed off as he is, I'm sure, you know, God only knows what this guy would say. Look, I gave him the forum to come on and say his piece. Maybe he wasn't expecting that. That might have caught him off guard a little bit. But look, I think also what's going on here is Alex Riley has got to be frustrated as all hell. Because here's a guy who used to be on the main roster. He was managing The Miz when The Miz was the WWE champion. And people talk about, oh, Alex Riley at one point was in the WrestleMania main event, which of course is just nonsense. That's stretching it a little. You know, he was there, right? He was still technically there. He was in the mix. He was doing stuff. Alex Riley, I can remember a time when Alex Riley basically wrestled a freaking match on Raw with Stone Cold Steve Austin. This is when they brought back Tough Enough and Austin was in the ring with all the Tough Enough kids and The Miz came out to interrupt him. I think it was Riley and Austin that mixed it up, right? That's got to be pretty cool for him. So this guy's done some things in his career and all of a sudden, whatever happened, I don't really remember what it was, but he ends up in NXT. He gets demoted down to NXT, although now I would argue times have changed, and when you get bumped up to the main roster, that's more like a demotion than anything else, for some of these guys at least. But Alex Riley goes down to NXT, and he's been toiling down there doing absolutely nothing ever since. And what Alex Riley fails to understand also, for whatever it's worth, I'm sure he wouldn't give a shit, but to be fair here, when Alex Riley was on NXT doing commentary, and you guys know this, anybody who's listened to this podcast for any length of time knows this, I had a lot of praise for the guy. I thought he was a hell of an announcer. You know, I mean, he's articulate, he speaks very well. He was very good, I thought, in the role of announcer, and I had a lot of praise for him. Now, towards the end, I thought he got very obnoxious. I don't think I was much of a fan of his commentary there at the end before he stopped doing it. I don't know if that was something they told him to do, you know, be more heel-like, be more obnoxious. I mean, I think Corey Graves does a great job now in that role. I'm a fucking huge fan of Corey Graves. But for the most part, I had a lot of praise for Alex Riley when he was an announcer. But he wanted to wrestle. So they let him come back to be a wrestler, and he's done nothing. He's done dick since then. And I'm sure for him, that's got to be incredibly frustrating, because I'm sure he wants to be in the mix. I'm sure he wants to eventually make his way back up to the main roster. Who the hell knows if that's ever going to happen? He just seems like a lot of those undercard guys in WWE. Look at Damian Sandow. Here's a guy that's going to the shows every week. He's sitting in the back and catering. They trotted him out on Monday night last week. When was the last time you saw Damian Sandow on Raw? This guy comes out, and you got people in the building saying he got one of the biggest pops in the entire show. This guy is a ghost. and the people still love him, but they don't give him a chance. I'm sure there's a lot of guys like that who work for WWE who are fucking frustrated because they're not doing anything with them. So I think part of this is also a lot of frustration for this guy boiling over. I kind of feel sorry for him. I mean, I've had more TV time on WWE programming in the last 3 months than Alex Riley has. But that doesn't give him the right to go on Twitter and start trashing me. I have a disgrace of a show. You know what? I'm pretty content with how my show is and how successful it's been. You know, I don't need Alex Riley to tell, oh, you, I'll come on and give your show credibility. That was one of the funniest things I read all week. I mean, that's high comedy right there. As if I need Alex Riley to come on the show and give me a shot in the arm in terms of credibility. So here's where things stand. Alex Riley has not said anything since then. I think I probably caught him off guard by actually inviting him to come on the show. My offer still stands. Anytime he wants to come on the show, he says, I want a live mic. This show is not live. If Alex Riley wants to come on, I will do with Alex Riley what I've done with all the other people who I've had on the show as guests, be it Daniel Bryan, Shawn Michaels, Edge, The Horseman, John Cena. John Cena's one. I'd love to talk to Alex Riley about John Cena. DDP, RVD, Booker T, JR, everybody. It would work no different with Alex Riley than it worked with any of them. I would treat him the way that I treated all of them. We'll tape the interview. When it's done, I'll edit everything together and it'll go up that same day. He doesn't have to worry about me making him look bad. The only person that can make Alex Riley look bad, if this week was any indication, is Alex Riley. So anytime he wants to come on, and again, these guys don't go around doing podcasts. I guess, you know, if he gets a permission slip and they let him come on, he is welcome on anytime he wants. We'll work out the logistics and he'll have an open forum to say whatever the hell it is he wants to say. And we can have a discussion, a back and forth discussion. My offer still stands. But after this week, I'm not talking about this anymore because this is just a gigantic waste of time. But I wanted people to get, you know, people are like, what the hell happened here? So that's what happened. There really isn't some grandiose story behind it. Everything I just said is exactly what happened. And again, I'm only assuming that's the clip that set him off. But if you listen to the clip, at no point do I ever say Alex Riley has no talent. It was a comparison between Alex Riley and Triple H, who is his boss, by the way. So if anything, he should be flattered, you know, coming out looking like Triple H. Triple H has had quite a bit of success in his career. I think if Alex Riley had half the success that Triple H had, he'd have a pretty good career for himself. I don't see what there is to get bent out of shape about. But don't go around and twist my words and say I said shit that I didn't say, because that's just complete bullshit. That's low-rent Bush League nonsense, and he knows it. And the fact that he would spend part of his birthday attacking a podcaster on Twitter may not speak very well to the frame of mind that Alex Riley is in right now. So, the ball's in his court. We have two crime stories this week I thought were kind of interesting and worth sharing. They're loosely related to wrestling. Dolph Ziggler's brother, Donald, I didn't even know he had a brother named Donald. I mean, I know Ryan Nemeth is his brother. He used to work in NXT. Cleveland police issued a warrant for the arrest of Donald Nemeth on the charge of aggravated murder in connection with the shooting death of Joshua Maskell on January 23rd. They say Nemeth attempted to rob Maskell before shooting him. And police are still searching for him. I don't know how close they are, but that's got to be some heavy shit for Dolph to deal with while he's on the road. So I feel bad for him. And the guy that was shot, obviously. The other story, you heard some of it at the top of the podcast. That was a real story, by the way. A would-be bomber threatened to blow himself up inside a TV station in Baltimore. And it just so happens that Ring of Honor's corporate offices are housed inside that same office building, and they had to be evacuated. The guy was dressed in a hedgehog onesie, and he was also wearing a surgical mask. He was wearing sunglasses and a vest that had wires sticking out of it, and he demanded that the TV station broadcast his rants. I still want to know, are we sure Alex Riley didn't buy himself a hedgehog costume and drive up to Baltimore? Because I'm not convinced that didn't happen. So it turns out the vest was a life preserver that was rigged up with wires and candy bars wrapped in aluminum foil. It just looked like a bomb. Thankfully, nobody other than the shooter was hurt, including the folks in the ROH office. So, what a weird week this has been. This has been a weird fucking week. Pro Wrestling Sheet broke the news that WWE announcer Rich Brennan was released from the company. He was let go on Wednesday. It was the day after he worked the main event taping with Jerry Lawler and was harassed on commentary by Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens also grabbed his phone off the desk, I think a couple of weeks back on main event, and threw it on the floor. I did love how they ended the show with a shot of Rich's phone just laying on the ground while you can hear Lawler cackling in the background. It's almost like they knew they were getting rid of this guy and they did it just to fuck with him. I'm sorry to hear that, though. You know, I know he hasn't been on SmackDown or NXT for a while. At different points, Rich Brennan did the lead play-by-play on those shows. They've had him doing main event with Lawler and handling some backstage interviews on Raw and that kind of thing. In fact, the last one he did was on Monday. It was for the YouTube channel. He interrupted Becky Lynch as she tried to eat a salad with chopsticks. Now, why was Becky Lynch eating a salad with chopsticks? Because she's out of her mind. That's why. That's why I love her so much. I think she's great. But it was only last August that Rich Brennan was made the lead announcer on SmackDown. And then what happened is they hired Mauro Ranallo. And look, I don't think anybody's going to argue with the move they made there. Mauro is one of the best out there, maybe the best. But it's too bad they couldn't find a place for the guy. It's always possible, I suppose, he did something that got him fired. Maybe he spoke out of turn or did something. There's no indication of that. It just feels like he may have been the odd man out. They don't have a need for him at the moment. They don't have a role for him. And so they got rid of him. And the same thing with Arda Ocal. Arda Ocal was also released this week. His name in WWE was Kyle Edwards. They didn't really do much with him either. He was doing stuff for the website. He was doing stuff for the network. Arda used to help JBL run the Layfield Report back when I was still writing there. So I was sorry to hear that. Ric Flair was in the news this week. Not a very good week for Ric Flair. He fucked up at the SmackDown tapings. It was edited off the show when it aired. But during a heated exchange in the ring, it was Charlotte and Rick. They were in there as part of this Ambrose Asylum segment with Natty to hype up their women's title match at Payback. And I think Natty had made a comment about basically like Bret Hart being better than Flair or a better wrestler or something like that. And Ric Flair got all animated and he lost his composure. And he told Natty, kill yourself if you believe that. Kill yourself. And suffice to say, that did not make the airwaves. Although it was very funny, you could see the exact moment where Charlotte's facial expression changed and she realized that her father had fucked up. And then Dean Ambrose is just in the background laughing his ass off. It was actually quite priceless. But the other incident took place at Logan Airport. I think Flair was probably on his way home after the tapings. And there's been a lot of stories about what happened. TMZ came out and basically debunked all these stories about him being drunk and not being allowed on the plane because he was being... Or he was clearly inebriated, and they said, no, he fell, he hurt his hand, and after they helped fix the wound or whatever, gave him a Band-Aid, he made his flight and he went home. And that may well be true, but, you know, there were other reports from, like, PW Insider that said, based on several people who were there, he was at the bar, which I don't think is something they denied. And it was very weird because his representative came out with a statement, and in the statement she said, well, you know, Rick and his friends have... You know, like, we're sure known to hang out at the bars ever since the 70s. It was just a weird thing for them to put in, like, an official press statement. I say this as a press person. But there were other people there who said he was drunk. Was it a case where the cops just kind of covered it up? And, you know, I don't know. It's impossible to know. The official story is that it had nothing to do with that. He hurt his hand. How he hurt his hand, they didn't say. Other reports say that he tripped and suffered a cut on his head, and he was bleeding. The truth, I think, lies somewhere in the middle, but Ric Flair did not have a great day at the airport. I think this was back on Wednesday. But speaking of Flair, and I believe Flair, he'll be there at Payback tonight with Bret in the other corner, and we'll see what happens. But speaking of Flair, I watched the latest Table for Three episode with Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, and Tully Blanchard on the WWE Network. Table for Three is a great show. They're coming out with new ones. There's a whole bunch of them that's already up in the archives. If you've never seen it before, they're all like about 20 minutes long. They take three legends. Usually it's guys that are familiar with each other. They were linked in some way. They had one with Sting and Vader and you know, DDP was in there for some reason. I mean, DDP is great. I don't know that he had anything to do with Sting and Vader, although Sting and DDP had some great matches. But, you know, that's generally kind of what the episodes are like. And so they had the Horsemen here in this episode, and I was very much looking forward to it. And I think it is worth going out of your way to see. Arn Anderson did more talking than any of them. And Arn Anderson kind of comes across as like this quiet guy. Ric Flair is very animated and he, you know, speaks a lot, obviously. Arn did more talking than anybody here. And it was great. And I love listening to Arn Anderson. And God knows he's got plenty of wisdom to impart, you know, over 30 years in the wrestling business. But he said something that I could not believe and that I've never heard anybody else say before. Like, you know, these legends, they do interviews and shoots and stuff. I've never heard anybody else say this the way that Arn Anderson said it. He was talking about the grueling schedule that those guys used to work, like 330 days a year, or whatever it was. If you ask Hulk Hogan, it was 500 because of the time zone differences. And he was talking about how they'd work twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday, double shots, you know, that sort of thing. And he claimed that the reason that we're seeing so many injuries now in WWE, which we are, and Arn is an agent there, and he, you know, is behind the scenes, and he works with all these guys, all these young guys. He claims the reason we're seeing all of these injuries now is because now the guys work 4 days on, 2 days off, or they work 3 days on, 2 days off, right? The schedule at least seems to be a little bit better than it was 25 years ago. I don't envy the schedule these guys have even today. I mean, that's just the lifestyle. I don't think I could do it. And they go on these international tours. It's like 2 weeks straight. They're away from their families for like 2 months. Kevin Owens did an interview recently and said he hadn't seen his family in like a month. It's a tough life, even now. You know, and I don't like it when people make comments. It's so much easier now for these guys. It might be a little bit easier than, you know, running these guys into the ground the way they did 25, 30 years ago. But I wouldn't say the schedule that these WWE guys have now is easy. Easy is not a word I would use for it. But Arn was making the point that now they get more time off. They don't work like a full week and double shots and that kind of stuff. And so because they're not working the kind of schedule that he was, they're not in ring shape. And their bodies are not toughened up the way that their bodies were. So basically what he was saying is the reason these guys are getting hurt is because they're not working enough. They should be working even more dates. And I was floored when he said that. And I wish he would have made that point when we interviewed him and Tully a few years ago, because it's something I would have loved to have like asked a follow-up question on. I don't think I would be able to let that one go, because it just, when I heard the way he said that, it shocked me. You know, at least make him clarify what he meant by that. I have all the respect in the world for Arn Anderson, but that, to me, is completely asinine, what he said here on this show. You would think, as somebody who has been in wrestling as long as he has, here's a guy who has seen his fair share of dead wrestlers over the years, guys that he used to work with, guys he probably called friends who were no longer around. Maybe it was more commonplace under Vince McMahon. Maybe he ran these guys like fucking circus animals more so than, you know, the NWA did. So maybe Vince was worse. I don't know. But a lot of those guys had a lot of problems with drugs, a lot of problems with alcohol, specifically because of that schedule. A lot of those guys would never even have been able to wrestle if they didn't first medicate themselves. And a lot of the ones who did, they're not around anymore. Yeah, and obviously, look, you're an adult, you make your own choices. A lot of those guys would have partied and did drugs and crazy shit anyway. I mean, you're always going to have people like that. But I don't doubt for a second that a good number of those guys were doing a lot of that stuff just to get through the frickin' day, just to get through the frickin' schedule or the tour or whatever it was. And also, here's another point, the rings back then, and this is more so in WWE, because I've heard guys in interviews talk about this. The rings back then were unbelievably hard. I mean, guys have talked about how bumping on those rings was like bumping on concrete. I mean, I don't know why it took so long for them to change their rings. I think it was like the late 90s, like 97, 98, WWE finally softened the rings up a little bit. But I mean, all those guys that worked hurt and were popping pain pills because, you know, the show must go on, and because they had to make the next town, they had to make all their shots, and they'd be on the road, like I said, 2 months straight without even sleeping in their own bed. Add to that, I'm sure you had guys who were homesick, right? They're away from their wife, they're away from their kids, they don't have Skype back then, they don't have social media, they don't have smartphones. It's a lot easier now to keep in touch with people. Back then, you didn't have any of that. So now these guys, on top of everything else, some of them are depressed, I'm sure. It's no wonder why these guys were doing all sorts of things they shouldn't have been doing. And he's saying these guys today are getting hurt because they're not working double shots on weekends. They're working, you know, they're not working 6-7 days a week. That's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. I'd like to think that maybe he just explained himself really poorly. I think one reason for all the injuries, I think, is, you know, the ring style. The ring style now and the moves these guys do. And that's another point. Back when Arn Anderson was wrestling, okay, in his company, at least, I won't speak for Lucha Libre or anything like that, guys weren't doing fucking suicide dives through the ropes in every single match. Seriously, everybody on that roster now feels the need to dive through the ropes in their matches. How somebody like Big E has not broken his shoulder yet, I have no idea, but it's going to happen at some point. You know it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. It's not as though working these guys even more is going to force them to change their style. You're just going to have guys working the same style an extra 2-3 days a week, and you're going to end up with even more injuries. Back then, you know, Jake Roberts could set up a guy with a DDT and the place would explode. Today, the DDT is barely a fucking setup move. Nobody takes it seriously. And even with the style that these guys wrestled 30 years ago, okay, headlocks and body slams and abdominal stretches and basic moves, you know, maybe a more of a focus on psychology, a slower style, a quote-unquote easier style, even with that, a lot of them still got hurt. And they just didn't say anything about it. And I'm sure some of them were on steroids, and when you're all roided up, you're going to get hurt. Whatever the reason, a lot of them still got hurt, even with that style. And, you know, what happened? They didn't say anything about it. A lot of them took drugs to get through it. If the guys back then were forced to wrestle the same schedule today, okay, that they wrestled back then, but transplant that to 2016, and let's say WWE took its wellness policy as seriously as they claim they do, so you have the modern-day wellness policy managing the old schedule, okay, merge the two together, I guarantee you, most of those guys would not last. They would get a concussion, and they'd sit them out for 6 weeks. Or they'd be taking God knows what, and they'd be getting suspended left and right. You wouldn't even have a roster left. So maybe he was trying to make that point about changing the style. That's not what he said. I'm just reaching for an explanation here. If that was what he was talking about, he didn't do a very good job of it. But maybe the point is, slow it down. You can't work 30-minute matches every night, night after night, like those guys did back then, doing the kinds of things they do in most matches today. If that's the point he's trying to make here, he's probably right. But I think the audience now has a certain expectation when it comes to matches, you know, when it comes to work rate or whatever word you want to use for it, that I think it would take a complete re-education of the wrestling audience, or of their audience anyway, for it to work. To get those simple, basic moves to mean something again, because today everybody kicks out of everything. And maybe that works every now and then when it comes to like a big epic match like Shawn Michaels against The Undertaker at WrestleMania, but you can't be doing that kind of stuff week after week after week. I made the comment during WrestleMania, I tweeted out, during the Chris Jericho-AJ Styles match. And I liked the match overall. I thought it was a good match, but it got to the point where I said, what is this, a Ring of Honor match? Kicking out of, like, finishing moves left and right. Oh, this has got to be the finish. Nope, he kicked out again. And this is the second match on the card. this is not like middle of the show, co-main event, main event. I think it was the second match on the show. And I made the comment, like, is this a Ring of Honor match? Because for the longest time, maybe less so today, but ROH matches, and I'm not just talking about main events, matches up and down the card, opening matches. I was at shows in New York, the opening match. You'd have guys kicking out of finishers left and right like you thought it was a WrestleMania main event. And in some cases, this was like comedy guys like Colt Cabana and stuff like that. They're kicking out of finishers in the opening match. The opening fucking match. And it's like, you set the bar so high that at some point, there's nowhere for you to go. I think that was a complaint that Jim Cornette had when he came aboard in Ring of Honor. And you could say what you want to about Jim Cornette and everything that happened with him in that company, but that's something I would agree with him on. And you could tell, like, when he came in, that style started to change in Ring of Honor, where it's like, I know the undercard guys, they're fighting for their own spot, and they want to go out there, and they want to steal the show, but you guys can't be doing this shit on the first half of the card. You got to save that for the matches on the second half. And I think that's where you started to see that change under Cornette in Ring of Honor. But to go back to Arn, I mean, you know, if his larger point is slow it down, don't do so much, make it mean more, then I totally get that. But if he honestly believes that working more dates would somehow reduce the number of injuries, I think he's out of his mind. On that note, we move to Raw this past week, which was live from Hartford, Connecticut, the go-home show to Payback tonight. Raw Instapoll, over 1,800 votes. 55% of you voted meh. I put meh as an option this week. 30% thumbs up, only 15% thumbs down. So I guess meh is better than thumbs down, so that's a positive. They honored China with a graphic at the beginning of the show, and a video tribute in the third hour, where they showed tweets from various wrestlers. I saw some people complaining about the placement of the video, like the fact that they gave her a video package in the middle of the show instead of at the beginning of it. They've done that for plenty of other people before. Like, just be thankful they did anything at all. I mean, there was never a doubt in my mind they would. I said that last week. But be thankful we got what we got. You know, they acknowledged her. It was actually, I thought, a nice video. Was it the nicest video they ever did? No. So what? Now we're ranking tribute videos to dead wrestlers? I mean, is that the next What Culture list? You know, they love their lists over there. Is that the next What Culture list? The top 15 dead wrestler videos? I mean, I think it's time that we move on here. They announced that at Payback, Vince McMahon will decide whether Shane or Stephanie will get control of Raw moving forward. Looks to me like they're either going with the co-general manager idea, whether they call them GM or not, I don't know. Or, you know, I could see them, a lot of you guys have said the same thing, giving Raw to Stephanie and SmackDown to Shane, try to boost SmackDown a little bit and keep Shane in the mix, and you can keep the authority on Raw. I don't like that idea. I mean, Vince, either way, I think we're going to end up with some scenario where Vince tries to create competition between the two of them. Not a formal brand split, which I think would be just a terrible idea anyway to do right now, but you know, a little competition never hurt anyone. It could be entertaining, I suppose. Well, I say competition never really hurt anybody, except WCW, I suppose. It sure drove Eric Bischoff insane. Drove him off the deep end. But again, if we can somehow take this and it gets us to a place where we can have Triple H against Shane McMahon, like a storyline there, maybe. And I could see that ending in a match at some point, too. I wouldn't mind that at all. I like the idea of a dynamic between Shane and Triple H, kind of playing off this idea that there's real life, like, pent-up frustration and bad blood between the two of them. And I don't know if that's true or not. It may be. I don't know. I can't speak for Shane. But I like that idea. Shane and Stephanie, to me, not really a fan. But if we can somehow get Triple H in there and get the two of them face-to-face, I'd like to see that. We also learned that John Cena is coming back on Memorial Day. Of course he is. He's the Marine. The All-American hero. So of course he would come back on Memorial Day. So for all the Cena haters out there, they've now given you ample time to go through the various stages of grief. First comes denial, then comes anger, right? The anger sets in, and you try to bargain with them. So it's like, you know, how about Randy Orton? We'll take him if you keep Cena out a little bit longer, right? But then that doesn't work. Then comes depression, and then finally, by the end of May, you'll get to the acceptance phase. It's actually, you know, it's pretty amazing how much fun it was to watch that whole U.S. title open challenge stuff and just watch Cena come out and defend that title most weeks. And they actually focused on the damn thing for a change. And then to see what they've done with it since, which is absolutely nothing. I mean, it is the least relevant title. It went from being, some might say, the most relevant with Cena to being the least relevant title in the entire promotion right now. It's unbelievable. They had a great video package hyping up the Sami Zayn-Kevin Owens match at Payback. I love the subtle things about it, like Kevin Owens, you know, despite all the awful shit that he has done to Sami Zayn from the very first night he came in. You have Owens in this video claiming that he's actually the victim. He goes, I'm the victim because Sami eliminated me from the Royal Rumble for some reason, and he cost me my shot at being WWE champion. I'm the victim. I just thought that was great. Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson made their in-ring debut on Raw against the Usos. I expected this to be a beatdown, beat down the shoulder, because we know Jay has the injured shoulder. Just, you know, beat him down, get a quick win for the new guys. And I figured, you know, with the whole shoulder thing, maybe there's your out. Because, you know, the Usos are one of the more popular teams, and they've been tag team champions multiple times. They're not a bunch of job guys. I kind of get it. You're not going to go in there clean and beat them in 30 seconds or anything like that. But this was not what I expected. They had a long match with lots of rest holds. It got kind of boring. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Not the kind of match I was expecting for their first night in. They won with the Magic Killer. So, you know, at least I got the win. You never really know with this company, but at least I got the win. Roman Reigns came out to make the save after they kept beating down the Usos after the match, and they chanted boom at him. Let's all pretend they chanted boom at Roman Reigns. That makes it a little less embarrassing. But really, though, I mean, they were in Hartford, Connecticut, right? Hartford is not exactly known as being this rowdy town or anything like that. They were in Hartford, which was practically comatose for the entire show. But they booed the hell out of Roman Reigns every time he came out and he appeared on screen during the show. I will say I did hear some cheers toward the end of the main event. Some cheers. They were still drowned out by boos. But for the most part, every other time he made an appearance on the show in a backstage segment, he came out to make a save. He came out for his entrance. He got booed. They booed the hell out of this guy. So for those keeping score, put another pin on the map. Okay, we got ourselves another one of those smart cities that people love to talk about. I'm running out of pins here. They ran a Make-A-Wish package before the main event that put Roman Reigns over as this great guy. And then he comes out, he walks right over to the same Make-A-Wish kid in the front row. And he interacted with him for a few seconds. None of this mattered. The people still booed him anyway. Because they see right through that kind of stuff. And I think it's great what they do with Make-A-Wish. I think it's great. I don't have a problem with Roman Reigns. I didn't have a problem with John Cena and all the stuff that he does. But you also didn't see this sort of thing back. I mean, WWE has always been involved with Make-A-Wish going back decades. This is not like a new thing. But I can't remember very many times where Bret Hart would come out for a match and he'd go over to the Make-A-Wish kid, strategically placed in the front row. Bret would go, he would put his glasses on some kid because he was this great heroic babyface. He'd get in the ring and he'd wrestle. I don't remember seeing, you know, Hulk Hogan even for all the charity work that he did. I don't remember seeing him come out and the camera focuses on him as he goes over to the Make-A-Wish kid in the front row. I don't remember seeing Steve Austin doing that. I don't remember seeing Shawn Michaels doing that. So this is a relatively new thing that they've been doing, and people see right through it. And they have absolutely, you know, every reason to do so, because it's very obvious why they do it. And I think some people just don't like Roman Reigns, that's true, but I think what people don't like about it is you try to separate the two. You can run a Make-A-Wish package, and you've got a mixture of baby faces and heels, and they're like the greatest people on earth, right? They're meeting these kids and they're smiling and they're making them so happy and it's great. And it could be John Cena or it could be Kevin Owens. It doesn't matter. They mix them all up. Stephanie McMahon comes out on TV. She's the biggest bitch in the world. She used to have I Play a Bad Guy on TV in her Twitter bio before she finally took it down. I don't think that part's in there anymore. Think about how bipolar this show has been now for years, where the Authority, they would reign supreme, and in one segment, the Authority comes out, and they're doing everything in their power to screw Daniel Bryan, or screw Dolph Ziggler, or screw John Cena, and make you hate their fucking guts. And Stephanie is very good at that. She's very good in her role, and she's just, you know, she can come off as the most evil, vindictive woman in the entire world. But then, like, one or two segments later, they show Stephanie McMahon reading to a bunch of kids at school, and she's talking about, you know, it's very important for these kids to stay in school and have role models, and Stephanie's smiling with all these kids, and it's like, you're watching a television show, and they beat this into you that it's a TV show, it's entertainment, and I think what people resent or what people don't like, it takes them out of that. How do you reconcile that? How do you air something like that, and then 2 segments later, oh, well, okay, now we have to switch back to, like, you know, fake phony TV mode here, and now we have to boo her. Like, it doesn't work that way. People don't want to see Roman Reigns coming out, and there's the camera, and he's going over to the Make-A-Wish kid. You know what I mean? He could do that when the match is over and the cameras aren't on. I don't think it's a matter of, oh, what's wrong with these fans? Why are you booing Roman Reigns? They have every fucking right to boo Roman Reigns if they want to, and it doesn't make them a bad person. You don't have to feel guilty about booing Roman Reigns because he went over to the kid at ringside. That's WWE's fault if they put that kid and they put Roman Reigns in that situation. It's not our fault. It's their fault. There's got to be a separation there. And I will say, you know, when I saw Roman come out, I thought to myself, they've got him shaking hands with sick kids now before his matches. Not a very encouraging sign for those of us hoping for a heel turn. But I'm going to keep hope alive anyway. I may be wrong in the end, but I'm going to keep hope alive that there's still a chance. It might happen. It might happen as early as tonight. If anyone thinks that Gallows and Anderson, they can't go with Roman, it makes no sense. They've been attacking him. Your Roman Empire idea makes no sense. It'll never happen. Just remember this. Shane McMahon has been running Monday Night Raw every week since WrestleMania. Making sense means nothing to these people. So, never say never. So on this show, each member of the League of Nations lost their respective matches. Sheamus lost to AJ Styles. Thankfully, AJ survived. Some people usually don't when they wrestle Sheamus. Rusev lost to Sami Zayn, or the taxi cab driver, is how I've heard Vince Russo apparently recently describe Sami. You know, if Zayn is a taxi cab driver, then Russo is a pizzeria owner, since we're going to stereotype everybody. The only difference is, it's Russo. So, when you go in and you ask for a pie, he swerves you, and he gives you a fucking pint of lo mein instead. And in the main event, Alberto Del Rio lost to Roman Reigns. And then on SmackDown, Del Rio and Rusev walked out on Sheamus in their match, and they fought backstage afterwards, and then Sheamus tells them, the league is no more. It's over. And I immediately started singing Damian Sandow's theme song. Hallelujah. This league is dead. Thank God. JBL will be very disappointed that his modern-day four horsemen are no more. So Reigns won with a spear. Gallows and Anderson attacked him. Styles ran down to stop them, but he ate a Superman punch. And then Styles gave Reigns the phenomenal forearm to end the show. I like the build to the title match. I do. I'm not a fan of everything they do on this show, but I have been a fan of the build-up between Roman Reigns and AJ Styles. And speaking of said title match, I think it's time we get into the predictions for tonight's Payback pay-per-view, which is, I still call them pay-per-views, but I guess technically they still are on pay-per-view. I don't think they're completely off yet. So it is still accurate to call them pay-per-views. It is at the Allstate Arena in Chicago, which if you are one of these people who loves to make the arguments, oh, smart city, not a smart city, I will give you that. Chicago is probably on that list, if there is such a list of smart cities. It is probably one of their best cities, in all honesty. And I know a lot of the wrestlers enjoy working there. So it should be a fun show, if for no other reason, just to see what this crowd is like. I'm sure it's better than fucking Hartford was on Monday. We have the WWE World Heavyweight Championship on the line. Roman Reigns defending his first title defense since WrestleMania against AJ Styles in AJ's first main event on a WWE pay-per-view ever. And you know what I've liked most about this storyline, besides, you know, the little bit of intrigue they've tried to create about Gallows and Anderson and what are they going to do? I think they've made it overtly, patently obvious in the last couple of weeks that Gallows and, I was going to say Gallerson and Andos. My brain is fried. Gallows and Anderson, there we go. I think they've made it patently obvious that these guys are turning on AJ at some point very soon, probably tonight. So maybe I wouldn't have made it so obvious. But aside from that, what I loved about this build-up is that there's been none of the usual, we don't want you as our champion. You're not best for business. Best for business. Who gives a fuck about this best for business stuff and who the authority handpicks to be their champion? We've had how many fucking years now of this? And all of a sudden, we're left with, I'm better than you. I'm going to take your title. You're not better than me. I'm going to beat you. Very basic, simple stuff. It's two guys who think they're better than the other wrestling for the world title, as it should be. As far as my prediction, Roman Reigns is not losing this title. I would be stunned if AJ Styles won the championship tonight. Hey, never say never. Never say never. I would never ever bet my life on the outcome of a wrestling match. I would never bet on the outcome of a wrestling match, period. I think people who do are fools. But Roman Reigns is going to win. Roman Reigns is going to retain the WWE Championship. And I'm going to stick with my, I guess it's almost more like a wish. It's a pitch, almost more than a prediction. But I'll make it my prediction as well, which is that Anderson and Gallows do in fact turn on AJ Styles. And in doing so, they align with Roman Reigns. And they form the Roman Empire, and Roman goes heel. Now, they've got AJ Styles, who's pretty over as a babyface. Can he be the top babyface in the company? I think probably not at the moment. I don't want to say never, because you don't know. Maybe the guy gets more over, and a year from now, he can be that guy. I don't see him as that guy yet. But you've got Styles, who's pretty over. You've got John Cena coming back now in less than a month. So it's not like they don't have people who could kind of fill that void of Roman. And then you got Dean Ambrose as well. People have been itching to get behind Dean Ambrose at that level, I think, for a while now. So they've got options. It's not like they're left with no one. I just, you know, part of the reason I've been pitching this idea now for weeks and weeks. Look, I've been pitching the Roman Empire heel idea since November. Like October, November, going into Survivor Series. I was talking about this before anybody else was. Before the Roman, when the Roman Empire was just the merchandising thing they were doing with Roman, not the idea of a heel stable. Only at the time, I was talking about doing it with the Usos. And at this point, I'll take it any way they want to do it. They want to turn the Usos and put them in there? Fine, be my guest. But the goal here is to get Roman Reigns over to the heel side, because I think it would be good for him, and I think he's got so many potential babyface challengers, and he doesn't have as many if he stays the way he is now. So that's why I love the idea so much. And I know people hate, some people anyway, don't like, oh, Anderson and Gallows being lap boys for Roman. Who said they were going to be lap boys? They could all be together. I don't think it's a bad place for Anderson and Gallows to be in. I don't care whether you like Roman Reigns or not. He's the guy, right? That's what he calls himself. So it must be true. I could think of worse places on the card for these two guys to be, having just made their debut, than aligned with the world champion coming out in the opening segment every week and flanking him when he comes out for main events. I think that's a pretty good spot for them to be in. Now, where Finn Balor fits in all this? I don't know. Could we see Finn Balor tonight? Absolutely. We could see him tonight at Payback, without question. But I'm sticking with my prediction. They're going to turn on AJ. We're going to get the Roman Empire. You could bring Finn in later. Bring Finn in as a babyface. What are you guys doing? You guys are my friends. What are you, you know, I don't know. You can come up with a million different ideas for Finn. But I'm sticking with my Roman Empire idea. Dean Ambrose and Chris Jericho. If anybody was due for a big win in a pay-per-view match, it's Dean Ambrose. Although I think he beat Kevin Owens, I think, right at the Rumble. That was a big win. He lost at WrestleMania to Brock Lesnar. He lost to Triple H at Roadblock. It's time for Dean Ambrose to get a big, clean win in a pay-per-view match. It obviously will not hurt Chris Jericho at all. Chris Jericho will come out the next night, and he'll whine and bitch, and he'll be the same lovable heel that he has always been. Chris Jericho is awesome as the heel troll. One of my favorite things about Raw, honestly, and I have things I like. I have a lot of things I don't like. One of my favorite things about Raw each week is when Chris Jericho comes out and the inevitability that Chris Jericho at some point will use the word stupid idiot. I just think him coming out there and behaving like a five-year-old, and even the stuff he's done with Kevin Owens, I don't watch SmackDown as much, but I've seen some of their stuff together. They're so fucking perfect. Like, I want them to be a tag team, but I don't, because I think it's like beneath them to just put them together in a makeshift team. But I think those two would be so awesome together. But him coming out and calling people a stupid idiot for whatever reason just makes me laugh. He ought to put that on a t-shirt. I think it would probably sell very well. Like, even, like, I'm a stupid idiot. You'd be surprised how many people would buy that shirt. WWE Women's Championship on the line. Charlotte defending against Natalya. Ric Flair will, I guess, be in Charlotte's corner unless he hits a bar before the show. And in Natalya's corner will be Bret the Hitman Hart. And Bret's made it very clear, he doesn't want to be there. Because Bret Hart does not give a fuck. But he's doing it for Natalya. So he will be there in her corner. I don't know if Bret will get physical or not. He may not. Again, he's still recovering. You got to remember from prostate cancer surgery. He had wrist surgery many months ago. It's been a tough road for him coming back from that. So I don't know about getting physical, but he'll be there. And I expect that Charlotte will retain her championship. I expect Charlotte to hold on to that sucker until SummerSlam and drop it to Sasha Banks. But I think they'll go out there and have a hell of a match if they give them time. They work very well together. We have the Intercontinental Championship on the line. The Miz with Maryse defending against Cesaro. I think The Miz is retaining here. Yeah, he just won it. I do like Miz and Maryse as a combo. So I don't see the title change happening yet. But what I do want to see, and I'll make it a prediction. I think tonight we'll see Cesaro swing both of them, not at the same time. Although if he could pull that off, that would be very impressive. I just want to see Cesaro swing Maryse. Is it really like abuse on a female if you do that? Could they do that on a PG show? I think they could do that. What's so bad about being swung? So I think we'll see Cesaro give her the swing tonight, and that'll make it all worth it, and he'll get a big pop for it. So it won't be that big of a deal, him not winning the championship, if he gets the last laugh. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, this could be the sleeper on the show. I have yet to see a truly great Kevin Owens-Sami Zayn match since they both came over to WWE. I've seen them have them in Ring of Honor. I know they have it in them. The matches they had in NXT, they weren't like great matches. So I think here's a chance for them to go out there on pay-per-view, one-on-one, on the main roster. There's no titles or anything on the line, but it's just a grudge. It's a pure grudge match. And if they give them, you know, a good 10, 12, 15 minutes, I think they could go out there and they could tear the house down. So I have high hopes for this match. I think Kevin Owens is winning. We have Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy against the Vaude Villains in the finals of the tag team tournament to determine number one contenders to wrestle the New Day, I guess, at whatever pay-per-view is coming up in May. I guess we are in May, so later this month. Are they doing another one? They have to be doing another one later this month. Judgment Day or whatever. I'm so out of the loop on these fucking names, I don't even know. Extreme Rules, maybe? I think it might be Extreme Rules. But they're not doing the title match on this show. I think the Vaude Villains are going over. I just can't see the babyface versus babyface match between Kaz and Enzo and the New Day happening yet. I think it's early for that. I think the Vaude Villains win. By no means is this some sign that they're going to give the Vaude Villains some big push. I still think these guys are basically dead in the water. Even if they win this match, I think these guys are dead in the water. I don't think they're getting the belts. But I think they're going to win. I think the Dudleys are going to get involved. They're going to cost Kaz and Enzo the match and keep that feud going. So that's my prediction. And then Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin. I think Baron Corbin obviously is going to win. Ryback and Kalisto for the U.S. Championship on the kickoff. Second month in a row now that they are doing Ryback and Kalisto for the championship on the kickoff. And I have a question somebody sent in about this kickoff stuff. I'll address it in the mailbag. I think Ryback's going to win. I know Ryback made some comments recently in an interview he did overseas when they were on tour, and he was clearly very frustrated, right? Which kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier when I was addressing Alex Riley and some of the other WWE undercard guys and how frustrated I'm sure a lot of them are about their place on the card. At least Ryback, unlike Riley, is on TV. You know, Riley I could see being frustrated. I don't know what Ryback has to be so upset about because, look, they do this all the time. They'll feature guys for a while, excuse me, and then they'll not feature them for a while. It's like they go in cycles almost. And, you know, Ryback, they turned him heel, and they didn't really do much with him. I guess that probably is upsetting to him. And I do think that he probably is going to walk away here with the championship. I don't think it's a case where those comments are going to start burying him or anything like that. I think even if it's just to spite people and say, hey, they think we're going to bury this guy, fuck him, we'll swerve him and put the belt on him. Whatever the mentality is, I think he's going to end up with the championship. And honestly, at this point, it doesn't even matter. What they've done with that U.S. title is just absolutely disgraceful. I had high hopes for Kalisto, and this might help get him over as like a solid mid-card guy. And I really wanted them to do something with him and Neville at WrestleMania, and they didn't go in that direction. Then Neville got hurt. He broke his ankle. And you see Kalisto on most weeks, like on Raw, he's coming out as part of a tag team with Sin Cara. And it's like, why is this guy even the United States champion if he's just, you know, they're just doing the tag team thing with them? It just never made any sense to me. So at this point, I think for all parties involved, it's just good to get the belt off of him, put it on Ryback. Look, when Cena comes back, they want to put Cena back in the U.S. title mix. Let him beat Ryback for the belt. I mean, at this point, honestly, who cares? Who cares? It doesn't even matter. So that's your payback card. On paper, it looks pretty damn good. I'm looking forward to this show.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
This was a big week for NXT, and this is a spoiler alert, although WWE already went and spoiled it on their own webpage and on their Twitter. So it really isn't much of a spoiler. Former TNA champion Eric Young made his debut at the NXT tapings this week. He confronted the NXT champion Samoa Joe and then wrestled him in a non-title match. So we have AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Austin Aries, Eric Young, soon Bobby Roode. They even had James Storm at one point before he went back to TNA. Poor James Storm. What must he be thinking right now? Yeah, I mean, I guess he's making that money, but who knows? Who knows if he's even making... You know what? I gotta say this. David Hero, he co-hosts the Pro Wrestling Report with my boy there, Damian Nelson. Great show. And he's a fairly well-connected guy, friends with a lot of wrestlers. In fact, when I was in Dallas at the shenanigans party that they were hosting with Kevin Nash and all that kind of stuff, wall-to-wall wrestlers. I mean, you know, he's a very well-connected guy. And he's even worked with TNA before on some of their house show promotions back when they actually, you know, were running house shows. But anyway, on one of their recent shows, he said that one of the reasons that Bobby Roode and Eric Young left TNA was because they were owed a combined six figures in back pay. Six figures. That's a lot of money. So one would hope that James Storm is being paid, but who the hell knows anymore? They probably pay him in Dixie dollars. But, you know, good for Eric Young. I don't really see what the big deal is. I mean, he came out and got holy shit chance, really? I don't know about that, but, you know, good for him. You know, he's got a good gig there now, and, you know, look, he's a talented guy. He's got talents, I think, that he could offer. I just don't see, you know, the debut and the signing of Eric Young as being that big of a deal. The one I'm looking forward to is Bobby Roode. He's the one I'm waiting for. And I think with him, it's just a matter of when. It's not a matter of if. But NXT this week, Asuka and Eva Marie had a match. Non-title match, not for the championship. Asuka beat Eva Marie with a spin kick to the face. Nia Jax came out to rescue Eva. They had a brief stare down after the match, so that looks to be the next program there, maybe for the title. Eva got a lot of offense in this match. I mean, this was a decently long match. This probably went every bit of 10 minutes. Eva was on offense, I'd say, for more than half, which I don't know about that, because it's not like her offense really looks all that great. She has improved a little bit from where she had been before, so, you know, bit by bit by bit, Eva Marie is improving. That doesn't mean this was a good match. I didn't think it was good at all. But that's a step up from being exceptionally bad. She's had some exceptionally bad matches before. This was not exceptionally bad. So that's an improvement. Here's my issue with Eva, more than anything else. Because, like I said, she is improving. She looks like a million bucks. She looks like a billion bucks. The thing with Eva is she still moves like she's in slow motion. She moves like she's underwater. So there were parts in this match where they're both, you know, Asuka's selling for her, and it's like, all right, I guess we can try to buy into the fact that Asuka's actually in jeopardy here against this woman, even though I don't buy it for a second. and they're getting up, and Eva is like getting up and recovering and moving around, and it's like this match is going in slow motion. It's like, because she's trying not to mess stuff up. You know, she's not that experienced, so she can't, like, do everything in rapid-fire succession. I get that, but, you know, this is a match that's on their TV show. It just doesn't look good. That would be my main criticism, which I think is a fair criticism to make. But anyway, Asuka wins, and Corey Graves, I thought was great. Corey Graves on commentary is the biggest Eva Marie fan in the world. He browbeats Tom Phillips if he even attempts to talk over her entrance. He tells him to shut up constantly. It's really, Corey Graves, I thought, was great throughout the entire show, especially in the tag team match that we're going to get to here in a moment. I like the idea. I was thinking about this, before. I know it's not going to happen, not yet anyway, but I would love to see the combination on commentary of Mauro Ranallo as the straight play-by-play guy and Corey Graves as the color guy. I think Corey Graves and Mauro Ranallo together would be a hell of an announce team. I just have a feeling the two of them would just gel like that. And I really like Graves in that position. Mauro, I mean, Mauro speaks for himself. I mean, he's awesome. You know, we can get the Three Stooges off Raw, let these guys be the commentary team, and, you know, with the other guys, put them on SmackDown or something. I don't really give a shit. But that's what I want to see. I want to see those two as an announce team. We had highlights from Samoa Joe beating Finn Balor and Lowell Mass for the NXT Championship. They didn't show the whole match. They showed bits and pieces. They showed the finish. And we had a brief promo backstage with Joe, who didn't really have much to say other than he told Finn this was going to happen, and it happened, and that was it. He walked away. A man of few words. We got to the tag team match that I alluded to a moment ago, the Revival, who lost their tag team titles at TakeOver to Jordan and Gable. They're not happy about it. They wrestled Jeff Parker and Matt Lee in a total squash, but one of the most entertaining squashes that you will ever see. I immediately tweeted out that whoever those two guys are, they need to bring them back. And a bunch of you pointed out that they are a team, or were a team, called 3.0 in Chikara. I've never heard of them before. I should have known it was Chikara. I mean, no wonder they were so much fun to watch. So, shout out to 3.0. Corey Graves didn't know either one of their names. He referred to them as Jamoke Number 1 and Jamoke Number 2. It's like Bobby Heenan used to call people Ham and Eggers. Now they're Jamokes. Parker, I think it was Parker, he took most of the abuse. Matt Lee, his partner, was out on the apron being very loud and obnoxious to the point that Scott Dawson did not seem to appreciate that very much. And they took it out on that guy when he finally tagged in. At one point, Lee, he's out on the apron. He started a defense chant, and the crowd started chanting defense. And, you know, considering all the dumb chants we hear at wrestling shows, I'm kind of surprised, stunned, actually, that I haven't heard that one yet. You would think by now we would have gotten a defense chant, but this was the first time I can remember hearing it. Maybe he did it in Chikara, I don't know. So the Revival killed the Annoying One dead with the Shatter Machine. They cut an angry promo after the match, putting all the other teams on notice. Watch your back. We're going to get our belts back. This right here is what the match with Gallows and Anderson on Raw should have been. Although not to the degree that they made the Usos look like jobbers, but I just mean in terms of going in there and being completely dominant and just taking care of business in short order, making a statement. That's what that match on Raw should have been. This was great. This was great. This got the Revival over as a bigger threat than the Bullet Club was, I think, after their match on Raw. So, in that respect, it was very effective. The Hype Bros beat Blake and Murphy, who were without Alexa Bliss, which is not a good sign for them. At least it's not a good sign for Blake. I think Murphy. Isn't Murphy the one who's with Alexa? Murphy's kept himself out of trouble. Blake is the one who got into a little bit of trouble last year. I think he's probably been on their shit list since the whole DUI thing came out. I think it was last... I think it happened in the summer, but it came out like around Thanksgiving time. But anyway, after the match, the Revival laid out the Hype Bros because they don't like them either. Carmella beat Aaliyah with her head scissors submission. This is the first we've seen of Carmella since Kaz and Enzo debuted on Raw. I have no doubt she'll join them in due time. Aaliyah is the one who really impressed me here. This was her first TV appearance on NXT. I remember her from Breaking Ground. She's very young. She's only 21. And watching her there on Breaking Ground, which was not, you know, that many months ago that that show, I don't know when it was taped, but it, you know, stopped airing several months ago. I remember her from there, and I remember thinking to myself, okay, this girl is very young, she's very inexperienced, and she's what you would expect as this 21-year-old girl coming into wrestling, and, you know, they're trying to get her to, like, get her character down, and she's got no presence, and Regal is just shaking his head at her, and all that kind of stuff, and you watch her there, and you watch her here, and I don't know about everybody else, but I thought it was like night and day. In her first TV match, she's already light years ahead of Eva Marie. She didn't look awkward in the ring doing things. She had good presence. She looked like she belonged. She looked like she belonged in the ring. She didn't do much, but what she did do, I was very impressed. So I look forward to seeing more of this Aaliyah here. And she's a very pretty girl, too. The Drifter. The Drifter. Against Shinsuke Nakamura. It was short, to the point. The Drifter got some offense in, more probably than he should have. But Nakamura finished him off with the Kinshasa. That may have been the biggest match the Drifter ever wrestles in his entire career, at least with that gimmick. He and Damian Sandow, I think, look enough alike. You know what I would do? I would take the Drifter off of TV. So this is an extension of what I was talking about earlier when I was addressing the Alex Riley stuff. Here's what I would do with the Drifter. I'd take him off TV right now. Right? Nakamura killed him. Take him off TV for a few months. Bring him up to the main roster. Okay, just bear with me here. Bring him up to the main roster and introduce him as Sandow's brother. Just it's a way at least to get Damian Sandow back on TV. That's really the end goal here. But it gives the Drifter something to do. It gives him a promotion to the main roster. It gets rid of this awful Drifter gimmick. But it gets Sandow on TV. They could be a tag team. Make them like polar opposites. Like he could be Sandow's wild and crazy brother that he can't tame and he's kind of embarrassed by him or something. You know, like the Odd Couple. They have this love-hate relationship, as all brothers do. And just let him have fun with it. You can't tell me that wouldn't be an entertaining mid-card act on the main roster. There's nothing new to report on TNA except this. James Caldwell over at the Pro Wrestling Torch website reported that Sinclair Broadcast Group, which of course owns Ring of Honor, has renewed interest in investing in TNA. Apparently they had interest earlier in the year, but they were unimpressed, shall we say, by TNA's initial offer. So they spoke again recently. They had a second round of talks, and this time TNA submitted a better offer. And so Sinclair, in addition to those other companies I mentioned last week, Sinclair is in the mix. And that would be most interesting if they gained majority control of TNA and you had TNA and ROH operating under the same umbrella. So we'll see where that goes. Speaking of ROH, the Ring of Honor COO, Joe Koff, was on the Ross Report podcast this week and had a few interesting things to say. He said there have been internal discussions about moving ROH to 2 hours. I hope not. I really hope not. I think there's enough wrestling as it is. I like the 1 hour format. Same thing with NXT. I mean, I'm a fan of NXT. I wouldn't want them, you know, bumping that up to 2 hours. I don't want to see them mess with that. He also said that he'd be open to a relationship with WWE. I think anybody would be open to a relationship with WWE. No, I don't want to have anything to do with them. Keep them away. And when he was asked about Ring of Honor programming airing on the WWE Network, he said that they need content, and so if they're interested in licensing ROH stuff for the network, he would be very happy to work out an agreement. I bet he would. You know, the network has over 1 million subscribers, so Joe Koff is no dummy. Although, you know, I hope he doesn't actually believe that this would happen. Yeah, but of course he would love to expose those people to the ROH product, but here's the thing. As long as ROH competes with them on TV, if you're on TV, as far as they're concerned, you're competition. It doesn't matter how big or small the channel is. You could be on the fucking World Wilderness Channel, and literally all you do is have programming of people walking through the fucking woods with a freaking axe over their shoulder, like a freaking lumberjack. It doesn't matter. If you're on TV, if you're on like a national outlet, you are competition to WWE. You know, that's how they see it. Now, if they didn't have TV, I would say there's a chance, there's even a likely chance that something like that could happen, but it's not going to happen. As long as they have TV, there's no way. I mean, I just remember reading, this was last year, how upset Vince McMahon apparently was that Ring of Honor scooped him. Ring of Honor got a Kevin Steen action figure out before WWE had a chance to get their first Kevin Owens figure out. And it, like, infuriated Vince. He's like, how could this happen? We have to make sure this doesn't happen again. And he was so upset that ROH had their figure out first. They beat them to the punch. So I don't think he would be in any rush to strike a deal with Ring of Honor. Triple H, maybe. Vince McMahon, not so much. Let's talk about Lucha Underground. Now, there was something I missed on the show last week, and I can't believe I missed this. But you guys pointed it out to me, and I thought you were just ribbing me at first, and I checked it out, and you were right. Lorenzo Lamas is the guy that was playing Councilman Delgado in that last skit on the show at the end of the episode last week. I couldn't fucking believe it. I was like, how did I miss this? I guess it's the hair. I mean, you know, he doesn't look that much older. It's the hair. It's the hair and the beard and all that kind of stuff. Because here's the thing. I remember him from the TV show Renegade. I think it was Renegade, a Stephen Cannell show. Stephen J. Cannell. I think Cannell had a whole bunch of shows. He had Hunter. Hunter is one of my all-time favorite shows. I love those shows. So Renegade was this show that would be on like midday on the weekends or something. And I watched it a lot. I don't know if I've seen every episode of it. And I haven't seen it in years. But back then, Lorenzo Lamas was a lot younger. He had this long hair. And I used to watch that show. And in fact, I am reminded, being that, you know, this resurrected the whole idea of Renegade in my head, not of the Ultimate Warrior knockoff from WCW, but I am reminded of how awesome that intro was to that show, like the theme song. So what I've gone and done here, I'm going to try something here. I have brought up I brought up the Renegade intro from YouTube. It's posted on YouTube. It's like a minute and a half long. And I want to play it here now, because if you've never seen the show before and you've never heard the theme song, I mean, you'll hear the intro. It's cheesy as all hell, but I actually think the theme song is pretty fucking great. So I'm going to play it for you now here. This is the theme from Renegade from the mid-1990s.
He was a cop and good at his job, but he committed the ultimate sin and testified against other cops gone bad. Cops that tried to kill him, but got the woman he loved instead. Framed for murder, now he prowls the Badlands.
Look at this. Got the silhouette of him on the motorcycle.
A bounty hunter. A renegade.
There we go. Look at this guy. It's like the American Badass on his motorcycle here. They got various clips of him running. Of course, he's got, like, no shirt on because it was so obligatory that he'd be sitting there, like, pouring water on himself. Look at this. So cheesy, but so great. Lots of shots of him driving through the hills of Arizona or something. Who the hell knows? Oh, there it is. There's the obligatory shot. There's another guy coming up here in the intro. He was a character on the show. It's like this Native American looking guy. I haven't seen him in anything since the show went on the air. Or went off the air, I should say. Here he is. What's this guy's name? He must have been in other stuff. Branscombe Richmond. Branscombe Richmond. That's the guy's name. Here's the woman. Kathleen Kinmont. I think she was actually really married to Lorenzo Lamas. But I will always remember her from Halloween 4. I think it was Halloween 4. Could have been fine. Ah, such a great song. That was great. I hope if Councilman Delgado makes like an entrance in the temple at some point, they play his Renegade song. See, Lorenzo Lamas in Renegade was the Drifter done right. If the Drifter had this as his gimmick, it might actually work. If he carried a shotgun to the ring instead of a guitar. I really just wanted an excuse to play the Renegade song, so I'm happy now. We had some great action on this week's episode of Lucha Underground. Johnny Mundo against Cage. In a cage. This opened the show. This was a match for one of the 7 ancient Aztec medallions. Taya kept climbing into the cage and getting involved. And finally, she got into the cage. Her and Mundo were double-teaming Cage with kendo stick shots, and there was an unprotected chair shot to the skull on Cage in here somewhere. I saw that, and it's like, put your fucking hands up. You know what I mean? Like, I just got done watching an interview with Scott Hall from WrestleMania Weekend. It's up on the Title Match Wrestling YouTube channel. They produce some great stuff there. And it's great to hear Scott Hall. You know, he just looked and sounded great, and I feel like he's got a great mind. And not every idea he pitches is a home run, but, you know, he's got a great mind for wrestling when he's in the right frame of mind. It's great to see. So I'm listening to him during this interview, and I think Hall made a great point about chair shots. And he said he never liked the ECW stuff where the guys would stick their heads out and kind of brace themselves with these sick chair shots to the head. Like, if this were a real fight, you wouldn't be fucking standing there waiting for somebody to bash you in the head with a chair. You know, we just had Balls Mahoney passed away. Balls Mahoney made a career of that, right? That he would do that kind of shit all the time. You know, what you would do is you would put your hands up to at least try to protect yourself. Even if you don't get them up in time and it hits you in the head anyway, you kind of give the illusion that you're at least trying to protect yourself. So the argument can be made that it's more realistic to at least try to get your hands up because that's what you would do in real life. So that's something I agree with Scott Hall on, and I thought about that as I watched this here. Because I didn't see this. I watched this show yesterday. I don't watch Lucha Underground the night that it airs. People are asking me, oh, what'd you think of the show? Like, every week, it's just inevitable. Wednesday night, Thursday morning, and they spoil everything. And, you know, what'd you think of the show? And I'm like, I haven't seen it yet. But I watched it yesterday, and it was like a day after I saw the Scott Hall interview. And I put two and two together right away, and I said, you know, he makes a very good point, and here's a great example of it. Taya brought handcuffs into the ring, but Cage cuffed her to the ropes instead and gave Mundo a Steiner screwdriver on top of the chair for the win. Thank God that was the finish. I think I would have flipped my lid if he kicked out. So Cage wins the medallion. This was a great match. I enjoyed this. Chair shot aside. Main event was a 4-way elimination match for the Trios titles. Dario Cueto came out before the match and informed us that Angelico had been in some kind of an accident, and therefore he would not be able to participate tonight, but instead the match would go on, and Ivelisse and Son of Havoc would just have to kind of carry the load on their own and defend their titles. The other teams were Phoenix, Jack Evans, and PJ Black, Joey Ryan and the crew, and Prince Puma, Dragon Azteca Jr., and Rey Mysterio Jr. I know Angelico did suffer some kind of elbow injury, like a legit elbow injury at the tapings last week, but that's... Yeah, they're taping now for season 3. So whatever they're doing here, this was clearly an angle. I guess we'll find out next week what happened to Angelico. So at one point here, Vampiro... this was great. Just in the middle of the match, Vampiro just goes, you know, what happened to Bale? Just like out of nowhere. I guess the crew was in there, so it wasn't out of nowhere completely. But he just asked that question, and Stryker says he has no idea. And I love how the announcers, they're kept in the dark, like, as part of the show. Not, like, really behind the scenes. I mean, they know what's going on. But just in terms of the world, in the context of the world that exists here in Lucha Underground, the announcers have no idea what's going on when they have those backstage segments and skits, and Dario Cueto's having a meeting in his office. It's not like there's a camera in there that the announcers are able to watch it like we are. And I like that. I appreciate that. That adds a sense of realism, because if you're trying to pretend that this is real, as much as you can try to pretend that a show with flying spacemen and dragons is real, okay, I know this is a stretch here, I know I probably shouldn't be looking at it that way, but if you look at it that way, I could appreciate that, because you would say the announcers should not have any idea what's going on here. So they didn't see Bale get his face eaten off by Matanza. How could they? So I like that. Vamp refers to this match at one point as a video game, which is a very appropriate description. I could not keep up with everything that was going on here, but it was a lot of fun to watch, I could tell you that. Joey Ryan and the crew were the first ones gone. Joey was begging Castro to tag him back in. Castro doesn't like him. Again, they're undercover cops. They don't get along, and Castro wouldn't tag him in. He was distracted, though, in the middle of all this, got rolled up, so That'll be trouble when their captain finds out that they lost. Jack Evans was in there with Eva Lise, who calls herself the baddest bitch in the building. So Jack Evans says, no, I'm the baddest bitch in the building, which got a laugh out of me. Eva Lise hits a code red on Jack Evans and is going for the pin when PJ Black comes in and super kicks Eva Lise right in the head. And Jack Evans gets the pin. So the champs are gone. We are guaranteed to have new Trios Tag Team Champions. And those new champions are Prince Puma, Dragon Azteca Jr., and Rey Mysterio, who pinned Jack Evans with a split-legged moonsault off the top rope. Not quite as crisp as the last time I saw RVD pull it off, but Rey gets the pin. He wins his very first title in Lucha Underground. And another great match. Two great matches on the show. Show ended, though, with kind of a weird segment. It was Vampiro. Vampiro was back in his lair. This was evil Vampiro. This was not announcer Vampiro. See, here, when he's evil, he's got the makeup on, he's wearing a hood. The guy's bipolar, so this was the other Vampiro. He calls on Pentagon Jr. to come out. And Pentagon rolls out in his motorized... I couldn't help myself. I mean, you see this fucking badass guy wheeling himself out on a freaking rascal scooter. Your first impression is to laugh. I'm sorry. So here he is in his motorized wheelchair. Apparently he is paralyzed after Matanza broke his back a few weeks ago. It's like when Doomsday broke Superman's back in the comics. I'm not even a Superman fan, but when that comic came out, I bought it because, oh, it's a big deal. Superman dies. Of course, he didn't fucking die. They built it up like the death of Superman, so they brought the fucker back later on. I still have it. I know I have it somewhere in a box. It's in plastic in a box somewhere here with my Spider-Man 2099 comic. Remember those? Do they even still do that anymore? They had Spider-Man 2099. They had Punisher 2099. I think they had some other ones, but Vampiro demanded that Pentagon stand up. Telling him, get up, he screamed. But the guy is fucking paralyzed. He tries, but he can't do it. So Vampiro grabs a candle, starts pouring hot wax on Pentagon's head as he screams in agony. Vampiro would not make a good physical therapist at a hospital working with paralyzed patients. That's what I got out of this. Yeah, it's like, here's some hot wax, now get the fuck up. You know, if you don't get up, I'm going to drop this giant anvil on your head. Get up. Man, I know he's trying to motivate them, but it's going a little too far. So Pentagon does manage to get up out of the chair, but he immediately falls flat on his face. And we see blood on the floor. I just found this whole thing funny. We see blood, we see smoke, and Vampiro calls him weak. You're weak. And that's how the show ends. This was the least badass Pentagon has ever looked. Actually, I take that back. This is the least badass Pentagon has looked since Sexy Star kicked his ass. But I am sure that we are due very soon for the resurrection of Pentagon Jr. So I look forward to that very much. Let's get to the mailbag. I'm not feeling great, so we might have to cut this a little short here. I'm surprised I've gone this long. Please include your name and where you are from when you do send in an email to thesolomonster@gmail.com. And I know I've said this before. Just know that when you email me, I read every single thing you guys send. I don't necessarily have a chance to respond. It may or may not make the show, but your email is not getting lost in the ether somewhere. It is being read. Richard from Toronto. In this network era, do you believe there is all that much difference anymore with being in a match in the kickoff show as opposed to being in a match on the quote-unquote main show? I don't believe that to be the case, he says. People seem to be up in arms over the fact that Kalisto is defending the U.S. title for the third straight pay-per-view on the is it really three straight? I thought it was two straight. On the kickoff, that's actually pretty bad. but Richard says, does it matter? Anyone who chooses to watch Payback will tune into the pre-show. It's not like the pay-per-view era where people could only watch the kickoff on YouTube or WWE.com exclusively. Now everything is on the network. It's a kickoff in name only. The reality is Payback is a 3.5-hour pay-per-view, and the U.S. Championship match is the opening contest. I'm not saying you're wrong. You're actually right, but I think it's just going to take time. People don't see it that way. Most people don't see it that way. I think there were reports even before WrestleMania that they had like a roster meeting and they tried to explain to the guys who were on the pre-show that it's all the same. Don't feel like you're being, like, the fact that they even had to give like a pep talk like that just tells you that the mentality is still there. Like, you're on the pre-show and so therefore you're not worthy of being on the main show. And so you're right. In the network era, it almost doesn't even matter. It's all the same. Now, I will disagree with you on one thing. You said that, well, everybody's going to watch the pre-show anyway. I'll speak for myself on this. That is not true. That is not true. Now, for most pay-per-views, unless I'm at the show, I go over to a friend's house, and so we watch the show together, him and his wife. And most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, we'll have the pre-show on in the background. We're not even paying attention to it. Like, in all honesty, I'm just not. You know, I'm doing other things or we're conversing because in our minds, it's the pre-show. And so until we get the big pyro opening, the pay-per-view has not yet begun. And that's just the reality of it. You know, that's how a lot of people, not just us, still see it. And to a guy like Kalisto or Ryback, you know what? Without asking them directly, I can't be sure. But Ryback certainly seemed awfully frustrated in that interview he did overseas, the one that I referenced earlier in the podcast. He doesn't seem very happy with his position in WWE at the moment. And, you know, the interviewer point blank asked him, you know, hey, you know, you were at WrestleMania, all these people, you must have thought that was a big thrill. And Ryback, like, the reporter's whole world came crashing down, like he was shocked. He was shocked that Ryback would respond with anything other than, oh, absolutely, it's WrestleMania, it's the showcase of the immortals, it's the granddaddy of come up with all these stupid fucking names that you can. Because I was there, and I wasn't paying any attention to Ryback and Kalisto, in part because I hadn't even gotten to my seat yet. And I could tell you this, I looked up, I was in one of the, on the club level. So I'm in this very nice area, we have all these different places that you can get food from, and they have some flat screen monitors where you can see what's going on. And I look up and I see there's like nobody in the stands. Nobody is there. Now part of that is because they obviously didn't start letting people in until a certain time. That's on the company. I'm sure if the company said, all right, it's time, let people in, they would have let people in. And I know some people had problems getting in. There was like a log jam. People were like protesting in the halls, let us in. There was something that happened. I think one of the ticket scanning things, like, it had gone down. They were trying to do it by hand. But the point is, tell that to Ryback. Tell that to Kalisto. They're wrestling in front of a crowd that should be 100,000 strong, and it didn't look like you had 20,000 in their seats. I mean, you looked, and there was nothing. I haven't watched that match back on the network. Maybe it looked better. Didn't look good from what I was seeing, you know, when I glanced up. So Ryback must be thinking to himself, oh yeah, this is great. I'm on WrestleMania. There's nobody in the fucking stands. So a lot of times, and we'll see if it happens tonight even to Payback. It depends maybe what city they're in. Sometimes people arrive late. If they arrive late, they're not arriving for the pre-show. They're getting there when the pay-per-view starts. It's going to take a long time, I think, before people get that out of their heads. There's a reason why it's called the kickoff. Okay, I'll be the devil's advocate here. If what you say is true, and if that's what WWE is telling its performers, first of all, these guys need to be compensated the way that everybody else on the show is, and I expect that they are, because if they're not, then your whole theory goes out the window. Because if guys on the pre-show are being paid differently than people on the main card, then it's not the same thing. So let's assume they are. Let's assume that's the case. Why even call it a kickoff? If you're telling me that Payback is a 3.5-hour show and it's all the same, just call it Payback. Just say that Payback will kick off, or Payback will start at 7 o'clock Eastern with a U.S. title match. And that's it. Don't call it kickoff. Don't call it pre-show. Don't, you know, throw it back to Renee Young and all of them at the desk so they can, you know, preview all the matches as though it is an actual pre-show. That's what they do on ESPN and TNT before a basketball game. It's the fucking pre-show. You go to those guys, they're sitting around a desk and they're talking about what's coming up. They're talking about the game that's about to start. It's not like that's part of the game. So that would be my counterpoint to what you just said. Not saying you're wrong, but that's not how a lot of people look at it. And I bet you that's not how a lot of the wrestlers look at it. Taymor from Mississauga, Canada. What are your thoughts on the Vaudevillains' performance so far since being demoted to the main roster? I thought that the gimmick was not going to go over on the main roster, but so far they seem to be doing fine and are probably going to be the number one contenders for the tag team titles. Also, what do you think about having Damian Sandow going back to his intellectual savior of the masses gimmick and managing or mentoring the vaudevillains, since both gimmicks are similar and his popularity might rub off on them? It also evens up the numbers if they are to feud with the New Day. I'm not a big fan of doing that with Sandow, only because I like my idea better of, you know, getting rid of the Drifter character and bringing Samson up and letting them be brothers, like a brothers tag team on the main roster. I just think it'd be more entertaining. The vaudevillains, you say they're doing fine. I guess they are. They're doing fine at the moment. And they are probably going to win this tournament. That was my prediction earlier. They're going to win the tournament tonight. They're going to be the number one contenders, and then they're going to lose, because I don't see them winning the belts. And once they lose, I think that's pretty much it for them. I mean, they'll be around, but it'll be the ascension all over again. I just don't see a long-term future for this gimmick, and I know Sandow's not doing anything, so I guess putting him in anything would be an upgrade from what he's doing. I'd rather not just get him involved with that stuff, you know? And you say there's similarities between the gimmicks. I mean, I don't see those similarities. I mean, one team is stuck in a time warp from the 1800s, and Sandow is, he thinks he's smarter than everybody else. I don't really see what the similarities are there. But anyway. Brianna from Jackson, Mississippi. I was listening to Kayfabe Commentary's new 1997 timeline with Kevin Nash. Nash remarked that he felt one of WCW's biggest problems during the Monday Night Wars was WCW's reliance on keeping their core Southern fan base and not expanding more nationally like WWE. However, after WCW was bought in 2001, my family, as we live in the South and grew up watching Southern territories like Mid-South, primarily stopped watching the product as the stars of the NWA like Flair, Dusty, Sting, etc. were no longer around. In your opinion, was Kevin Nash right in his criticism about this issue with WCW, or did he get it wrong? I didn't see the shoot. I just went on the YouTube channel and saw the trailer, so I saw the little clip. I'm not sure if you heard him talking more about this in the actual shoot, or if you're just going by what was in the trailer. I'm going by what was in the trailer and what you were telling me. So if I'm misquoting Kevin Nash, I apologize. I think there probably is a lot of truth to what he's saying. I don't think it was the biggest, not even close. Not even close to being the biggest reason WCW went down the tube. I wouldn't even put it in the top five, maybe not even in the top 10. But was it, you know, a contributing factor? I think he's probably right. You know, I think he's probably right in that. I mean, as Nash said in the clip I saw in the trailer, you know, he made the comment about when Scott Hall came in. And Scott Hall would constantly mock WCW. He would call it WCW. And Nash goes, they didn't get it. Like, he was openly mocking them and the whole Southern nature of it, and he said the company just didn't get it. They didn't understand. But I think there probably is a lot of truth to what Nash is saying. You know, when I think back to those WCW days, even when they were on top, even when they were number one and they were making a lot of money, they were at their peak, 97, 98. I know I'm generalizing a little bit here. I don't, you know, literally week to week. I'm sure they went to a lot of other, you know, places, but it was almost like when I would tune into WCW, it was always in a place like Tupelo, Mississippi. I mean, you're from Mississippi. So they would always go to Tupelo. Like, Tupelo was like one of their favorite towns. It's like every week, WCW was in Tupelo, Mississippi. That's what it felt like. Where they would go to, you know, a place in Kentucky, or they would be in Georgia. So they were, even at their peak, very Southern focused, if you look at where they were running shows. Now, they would run, you know, shows in L.A. and Chicago, not as much in New York for obvious reasons. But I always felt like they were hardly ever in those kind of cities, and it was always in favor of these other Southern cities, Midwestern, places like that. But I used to joke, like, oh, they're in Tupelo again. You know, or they would be in Sturgis for Road Wild, although that was more of an Eric Bischoff thing, since he had a freaking hard-on for motorcycles. And so he wanted to do that. But I think when you really look at, like, just the different towns they would run, he's probably right. And maybe they could have done a better job of branching out and trying to be a more national company. Because they would run other cities and they would go international sometimes to Europe, but they didn't do it nearly as much as WWE did. Even when WWE was getting their asses kicked, they felt like more of a global company than WCW ever did. I don't really know how popular WCW, even at their peak, really was overseas. Maybe, you know, we have a lot of international listeners here, and I know this is very informal, but if you're listening to this and you live in the UK or you live in Germany or France or Italy or any, or even Japan or any of those places, I'd love to hear from you. If you can remember back during that time, tell me how popular, especially compared to WWE, how popular was WCW in those places, like at their peak in the mid-90s? Because I'm not convinced they were really all that popular overseas. I mean, here they were. But you would think if they were so immensely popular overseas and they were making money, why didn't they run more often internationally? Why didn't they focus on that more often? They never struck me as being that kind of company, even when they had the means to be so. And you would think this is the time for them to really try to get bigger and really overtake WWE, and they just never did it. So I think Nash is probably right in a lot of ways. WCW never really grew out of being that quote-unquote southern promotion, even when they were kicking ass on top for, you know, 83 weeks or 84 weeks in a row. All along, they really were still that southern wrestling promotion. I don't think they ever really broke out of that mold. Tay from DC has a buy or sell on Kurt Angle. Which version of Kurt Angle do you think was his most successful run, 2000 to 2005 or 2006 to the present? This isn't even really a hard question at all. I mean, I'm buying on 2000 to 2005 and I'm selling on 2006 to the present. And Kurt Angle had a ton of great matches in TNA, but you can't even, I mean, there's no comparison between the two. You can't even compare the two. He was out of WWE, believe it or not, he was in TNA longer than he was in WWE for. When I first heard that, I couldn't believe it, but it's true. He spent more time in TNA under contract to Dixie Carter than he did for Vince McMahon. But his initial run in WWE will always be the run that Kurt Angle is remembered for. It's the run that made him, I mean, he was an Olympic gold medalist first, but it was the run that really made him a name in wrestling, in pro wrestling. I mean, even if he was in a better place physically and all of his problems and addictions and issues and stuff in the later years in TNA, because he had a lot of problems, clearly, toward the end of his WWE run. That's why he left. Even still, you can't, there is no comparison between the two. It is a complete joke to even compare them. You look at all the things that Kurt Angle did, all the different incarnations. You said, you know, you're telling me buy or sell on the different versions of Kurt Angle. There's a hell of a lot more than two versions of Kurt Angle. Maybe there was one version throughout his entire TNA run, but in WWE, I count at least three. I mean, he had a lot of different transformations from when he came in doing the whole goofy Olympian persona, and then he got serious, and then, actually, you know what, backtrack even a little bit more. I mean, he was doing more of the goofy comedy during the invasion, with Steve Austin, one of the only redeeming things about that whole storyline. Then he got serious again. And then he became the wrestling machine for that brief amount of time that he was in ECW. And then he was gone. So we got to see Kurt do all of these different things, play all of these different roles, wrestle all of these different guys, have some classic WrestleMania matches and programs with guys like Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero and Brock Lesnar and Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin. You can't top that. Nothing Kurt could have done, I think, in TNA, short of him being the one to take TNA to the promised land, and that was never going to happen because there isn't a single guy they can bring in. And we were talking about this last week. They have to go out and like sign a big name away from WWE to even have a chance. The only name is John Cena, and that's not happening. So short of that happening, there is absolutely nothing that company can do to ever really make a difference. And Kurt Angle, when he first came in, I know he was a difference maker in those initial weeks in the ratings, and even that, after a while, you know, he just became another guy. They brought in Foley and Hogan and Flair, and none of them made a difference. Even the great Kurt Angle could only do so much. So, for all the great matches he had in TNA, with Sting and AJ Styles and Bobby Roode and everybody else, there is absolutely no comparison to that first run in WWE. So I'm buying on that. And we'll end the mailbag there because my throat is on fire right now. One last thing, though. Last week, when I was talking about Prince passing away, I mentioned that as a kid, the three musicians that I probably heard the most in my house were Michael Jackson, Prince, and Hall & Oates. So you guys know I'm a big Hall & Oates fan, right? Or at least their classic stuff. Well, someone posted in our Facebook group something about a Colin Oates hotline. It's a Hall & Oates emergency hotline. I shit you not. When you call the number, you get this automated lady who asks you to choose from four different Hall & Oates songs that you could listen to. Unfortunately, it's only four. And Out of Touch is not one of them. That's probably my favorite one. But they had my second favorite one. They had Private Eyes. They had One on One, Rich Girl, and Maneater. And it works. It really works. You pick whatever song you want, and it plays. Now, how many other bands can you think of that have a fucking emergency hotline where you can listen to their songs at a moment's notice? I'm willing to bet not very many. I have to think that if this exists for Hall & Oates, it must exist for some other bands. But I haven't been able to find it. If you want to try it, the number, it works. I mean, it's let me bring it up here. 719-266-2837. Which actually reads 71926-OATS. But that's the number, 719-266-2837. And it really works. Now, just be aware, because I know we have a lot of international listeners, it is a domestic phone number. So if you are listening to this overseas, just be aware of that. But that's pretty friggin' cool. I wish they had something like that for Jim Ross commentary, for when we have to listen to shitty commentary on Monday nights. You know, we could just reach for the phone and bring up the JR emergency hotline and play some of his best calls to kind of cleanse the palate. There's an idea. I hope somebody jumps on that one. Anyway, follow me on Twitter at Solomonster is the place to go for that. We will have a poll up after Payback tonight. We will have a poll up after Raw as we do each and every Monday night. You can vote. Thumbs up, thumbs down. You can also leave us some love in iTunes and Stitcher. And keep listening to us in Stitcher. You know, we hit number 4 overall out of 40,000 shows. You know, now, next time it'll be number 3 and then number 2 and eventually number 1. So we can only do that with your help. So if Stitcher works for you, I know it doesn't for some, be sure to listen to us on there. Lots of different ways to get this podcast, not just iTunes and Stitcher. We have our own free app in the Google Play Store. You could stream us that way. You can stream us through the Podbean app, which is free. TuneIn Radio, Audio Boom. We are now on Google Play Music as of last week, so you can listen to us on there. Not on iPhone, I don't know why, but the podcasts on Google Play have been enabled, I think, only for Android devices and then on the website. So just something to be aware of there. Podbay, I mean, there's a gazillion different ways to listen to this show. So I thank you. I was able to get through this pretty well, actually. I didn't know if my voice was going to hold up, but it did. So we will be back next weekend with a brand new podcast. That'll be episode 439. I leave for Mexico in a few weeks. I guess I'm going to have to figure something out because I ain't going to be around that weekend. But we'll come up with a plan. So until then, be well, stay safe, enjoy Payback, and we will see you right back here next week. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Watch these promos on NXT. Watch Raw. Watch a Randy Orton promo or a Sheamus promo. They never, ever look at the camera. It's because that's what they teach them now. You are not allowed to look into the camera. I think it's just completely idiotic. Why are their eyes not on me? That's how interviews always work. They're talking to me. They're speaking to us. They're supposed to be speaking to the fans. Maybe that's part of the reason why these people can't make a connection with the audience. Because they don't fucking look at us.
The Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.